Hey everyone, welcome to Retro Rewatch. You know, that show where Patrice Brind'Amour and I talk about shows that she has seen before, but I have not. So first time viewing for me. And of course, we're still doing Stargate SG-1. And we are in season 3 now.
Yeah. And we're doing the episode where stuff goes boom, right? That's it.
Yes. Yes. There's some alien conflict that results in something having to go boom, and that's how we can tell this episode apart from all the others. Patrice, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's I mentioned it like earlier. It's quite hot here, but I'm melting, but I'm still here. So it's all good. And for people to this, like in 6 months, they're like, what is she talking about? It's like freezing outside.
Yeah, well,
we're recording this in summer, so.
I was going to go with we gated to a really warm planet.
Oh, that could also be. It's the planet Hotlanta, maybe, or something like that.
Yes, we're on Hotlanta. Yeah. Did I even tell people who I am?
No, I don't know. Who are you?
I don't know. I'm Jeff like, Gamet. Hi, everyone.
How many are you? And like, no details, please. Just the planet.
Yes. Yes. I'm Jeff, and I'm on Hotlanta right now.
Okay.
So what more do you need, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
Yeah. So, all right. So we said we're in season 3, and today's episode is Dead Man Switch.
Episode
7, season 3. And I know you, Patrice. You probably have some really interesting details about the episode.
I don't know if they're interesting, but I have of course a bunch of like details. I have some general stuff and some interesting tidbits as always.
Well, it's always interesting to me.
Okay, that's good to know. So let's jump in with the basics. August 6, 1999, this was released in the United States. So middle of summer, just like it's very apropos. It was, I also have it this time again for Germany. So you know roughly when I watched this, September 13th, 2000. And that is, yes, 2 days after 9/11. So significant date. That was 2000, right? Was it 2001? No, it's 2001. Okay, it's a year before. Never mind.
So foreshadowing.
Yes. Okay, it's too hot to think. No, it's a year before. Okay, all good. So, which also probably means that last time I was wrong about this. IMDb rating 7.7. That one should be correct because I verified it. Written by, well, a lesser known person. I don't know, never heard of him. Robert C. Cooper. Of course we know him. And also directed by a very frequent director, Martin Wood. So he continues his streak in the show. He's a good director. Not a lot of guest stars this time. So definitely, I would say, feels like a money saver when it comes to like guest stars and shit. We have Sam J. Jones as Aris Bock. Might be known for a little role in a little lesser known movie called Flash Gordon. And he is actually Flash Gordon. 1980 version of Flash Gordon. And I mean, he did bring his like humor and his swagger and like everything to the production. So I think he fit well for this role.
I think he did the role well.
Yeah, it's, I think I wrote it down somewhere later. It's kind of Boba Fett, which is also what he was going for. So it worked.
Yeah. And it's funny because you wrote down he's Boba Fett. And, and in my mind, I was calling him Space Boba Fett.
Yeah, it's kind
which
of.
Which is funny because Boba Fett is from space. Yeah. But since it's Stargate SG-1, I had to differentiate this Boba Fett from real Boba Fett. And he became Space Boba Fett.
Yeah, I said, but he—that's what he was going for, and it kind of worked for him. We have the second guest star is Mark Holden as Korra. British-born actor with an international stage and TV career. And you can see him to this day in many shows, in smaller roles, and also in video games, oftentimes as the voice for something. So,
oh, okay.
Big titles sometimes. So it's, yeah, he's having a good career. I mean, it's been 25, 26 years since this, and he's still at it. So good for him.
I was going to ask you if there's anything else I'd recognize him from, but then I realized there's so many shows that I haven't gotten around to watching that I probably wouldn't recognize him.
And I don't know anything about video games, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah.
Would have to ask other people.
I probably haven't played that game either.
Mm-hmm. Probably not. We have a German title, of course, and I told you last time this one was definitely spoilery. It is Kopfgeldjäger, which is Bounty Hunter in German.
Oh, yeah, that's straight-up spoiler territory right there.
Kopfgeldjäger is also a funny German word. It's like three parts. It's head, head, money, and hunter. So, head, money, hunter. Bounty hunter. First, this is the very first Stargate episode where we do not see the Stargate prop itself on screen.
Huh. I didn't even realize we didn't see the Stargate.
Yeah. We don't go step through it in the beginning. We don't leave through it at the end. Like, this is unusual, but yeah. We also have one person that is credited but does not actually appear, which is Donis Davis as General Hammond. Since we have nothing in Stargate Command, he doesn't show, but he still gets credit for it for some reason. Probably contractual.
Probably contractual. That would make sense.
Yeah.
That actually makes more sense than they shot a scene with him and then cut it.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible that they did, but who knows? This is the debut of the Gorwald cargo ship, as you mentioned. This is a nice set. Especially the insides, they built new sets. It's built for this episode, interesting enough. And it's, of course, later extensively redressed and reused in Stargate SG-1 and all the other franchises or other spin-off series. So
they got their money's worth out of this.
Oh, they absolutely did, yes.
I call it the turtle ship.
The turtle ship, yeah, and kind of is, yeah. The exterior shots use a detailed miniature enhanced with CGI, while the interiors were practical set built at the Bridge Studios in Vancouver area.
Okay.
So, nice one. The planet surface scenes you probably recognized. It's classic Vancouver area, gravel quarries and forest locations we've seen so many times. I was like, oh, this is the one with the naked people running around, basically.
Yeah, right? Yep. Yep, we saw where their little village was. Mm-hmm. There's a point where they're coming down the hill or down a slope into that area. Yep. And I recognized the little path they walk on from multiple episodes.
Yeah, yeah. So often reused set for or outdoor shot set, whatever location for that. Martin Wood, I have a comment here that I thought was interesting. He said that Sam J. Jones brought a comic book hero energy to the role, which influenced how the scenes were staged. So he did adapt to that person. And I think you can tell. As I said, Boba Fett, comic book hero or anti-hero, if you ever want to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a couple more for later. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, then I guess we can just hop in to the episode. I guarantee you I'm going to get stuff wrong. Even though there's essentially no B story here.
Barely, yeah. Yeah, it's basically that is also a unusual. We have a little towards the, let's say, the middle where they split up, but it's barely a B story, which is unusual for Stargate. I mean, we've seen so many A, B, sometimes even C, D stories. It's rare to have that almost linear telling. As I said, there's a little thing.
Yeah. But even still, I'm going to get the order wrong on a lot of stuff. I know it.
Probably because everything is so linear, you're going to get the order wrong.
Yeah, that's true. I really don't have places that I can use as landmark scene changes anyhow.
Yes. Yeah.
So
we start off in another BC forest.
Right. This one, what it shows is that evolution throughout our universe mm-hmm. is very uniform, because the trees not only look alike, mm-hmm. they grow in the same patterns.
Yes. It all looks like BC.
The same patterns.
Someone visited BC and then was like, oh, I should create planets that look exactly like that. And that's why. All right. Or the other option is stargates were placed in areas that look like BC area. Right. So the rest of the planet could be as diverse as Earth, but like they were like, no, we like this area. We like this weather. We're going to place them exactly where, like, what we like.
Well, that actually makes sense. Why would the gate builders put stargates where they don't want to go?
True. Good point. Yeah. So anyway, Stargate, the SG-1 team is looking for a UAV shot down by the Goa'uld, but Daniel, I think, remarked there's no sign of Goa'uld actually on the planet. He's like, that's weird.
And yet that does seem like it would be weird, because if they're shooting down UAVs, you'd think there would be at least a couple Jaffa near the gate guarding it. But anyhow, but when they do find it, it's clearly been shot down
shot down by a staff blast. They remark on that.
Yep.
And then Daniel runs into a force field of some sort. So does Carter.
Mm-hmm. And then Jack does something which is really, really stupid.
Yes. Yes. He shoots it.
He just starts shooting it.
Yeah, and I'm like, where are those bullets
going to go?
Exactly. You're going to kill your team. I mean, ducking is not going to do you any good in this case.
Right. Anyhow, luckily, no one gets hit by this spray of bullets that goes mm-hmm. bouncing off the inside of the force field.
Yeah, and then Boba Fett steps out from behind a tree.
Right.
Yeah, and he does look like Boba Fett, I have to say. Like, it's very close.
Yeah, it felt like the body armor he's wearing, mm-hmm. even though it doesn't fully cover his whole body. Mm-hmm. It's very clear they're going for a Boba Fett look.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he has a weapon that looks almost like the TER that we got from the Ritu episode and later.
I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right. It does have that. It does have that Star-Lord look.
The Star-Lord gun, yes. He mentions he's one of the galaxy's greatest hunters that nobody has heard of.
But nobody's... Yeah. And I thought that was really funny. He seemed offended that they mm-hmm. didn't know who he was.
Oh, yeah.
And then he points out that he knows who they are.
Yeah, exactly.
And Jack's like, well, how about that? We're famous.
Yeah, he says, well, fancy that. We're famous.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is the opener.
Right. So what'd you think about the opener?
I think it's interesting. I mean, it's kind of an intriguing thing. You're like, okay, you're like, what's going on? I mean, they clearly were captured. It seems pretty clear that was a trap of some sort. I mean, putting the force field exactly where the UAV would be feels like it's a deliberate thing. And since he knows who he's hunting, I'm like, maybe he's hunting them.
Yeah, that was my assumption. He lured them there mm-hmm. and trapped them, and they walked literally right into his trap.
Yeah, I mean, which also kind of expected, because, I mean, I don't think anybody was expecting a trap.
Right.
Yeah, I think they were more concerned.
It wouldn't be much of an episode otherwise.
That's true. But I think they were more concerned there might be Goa'uld in the area and they might have to defend their position than that they are actually getting trapped somewhere.
Yeah.
With a force field they've never heard of or seen before.
Right. So, I liked the intro. I mm-hmm. thought it was fun. Gave us a nice little setup. And so now we know where we're heading for the rest of the episode. They have to get away from the bounty hunter that they don't know who he is.
Yeah. So we come back.
Jack does something that totally makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. seriously makes sense.
Yeah.
he takes his knife and throws it at the bounty hunter.
Yeah, which, I mean, we know worked before.
Right. It goes right through the force field because it's not traveling fast enough.
Yeah. Not in this force field, though.
Right. And the bounty hunter gives Jack a hard time about trying to do that.
Yeah. And Jack says, can't, and I wrote that down. It was really funny. He said, can't blame a girl for trying.
I thought that was funny, too.
And then Aris Bock says, are you kidding? That's exactly what I would expect from you. Now drop your weapons or I'll kill someone.
Yeah, and he does, or they do end up dropping their weapons.
Yeah, I think they realize they don't have a choice, especially if once he mentions that he also disabled the DHD.
Right. So, okay, here's the thing that ends up happening. And I think I might actually be jumping ahead, but you know, he says, drop your weapons, you have to get rid of all your gear. And so they drop their gear, they take off their utility vest things. Nope. I'm jumping ahead, aren't I?
You're jumping ahead.
Okay. Well then I'll save that for when we get there.
Yeah.
But we'll at least there. I'm on brand.
We'll get there pretty quickly because this happens basically right after.
Oh, okay.
You're just in the wrong location. So they first have to walk through the woods.
That's right. And then they have to walk down the little...
Yeah, to the clearing that we recognize. We've seen this place before. And they're standing there, and I think he says something about the ship, and they're like, there's no ship here.
Right.
And then he says, Barokna, and a cloaked ship appears.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where they start. Where they now drop all their gear.
Okay, so they're taking off their gear. Mm-hmm. Daniel takes off his coat.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When they cut to the angle where they're shooting through the doorway from inside the ship to outside, and they're coming in. Daniel's jacket is on.
Yes, exactly. It's one of the little mistakes. There's a second one actually in that scene. And exactly that scene, because when they go in, Daniel actually stumbles across some of the gear, which was not planned. It just happened, and they left it in.
Oh, okay. I guess I was still so focused on he's wearing the jacket that he just dropped on the ground that I totally missed seeing him stumble.
Yeah,
that's okay. That's funny.
Yeah, and then we get a little bit of Tirkwiki.
That's right, we do, because he explains that this is a cargo ship.
Yeah, it's a ship of an older design as well, but he's never seen a cloaking technology, so that's new.
Yeah, I guess so.
And Aris says, it's an upgrade.
Yeah, well, there you go. And so Aris dumps everyone into... locks him into the cargo hold.
Yeah.
And then they're just stuck in there. He's gone.
Yeah. And Carter remarks, she knows he's not a Goa'uld. She can't sense a Goa'uld. So he's definitely not a Goa'uld, which is interesting. He's using a lot of Goa'uld technology.
Like, Jack's like, yeah. And so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They hear him leave the vessel. So they're like, okay, let's try to find a way out of here.
And Tirkwiki lets us know that the turtle ship can fly twice the speed of light.
Yeah.
And Jack's like, yeehaw, let's get out of here and fly home. And Sam points out that doesn't exactly work that way.
No, it would still take 10 years to get home because they're pretty far away. The reason for it is, of course, the DHD is disabled. So they're like, okay, how do we get home? And right. Jack remarks, should have let the dog out.
Which, yeah, that dog's going to be inside for a long time. Yep.
Yeah.
So Space Boba Fett comes back.
Yeah, and he's injured.
And now he wants Sam to fix him because
no, first he takes his mask off first. No, he takes his mask off. So we see him as like a human face. Mm-hmm. And then he asked Daniel to treat his wound because he's a doctor.
which
Daniel remarks of archaeology. And he says, "Oh, then Carter, right? And she, like captain." It's like, "No, I'm a major now."
And he's like, "Oh, I'll let the galaxy know."
Yeah, exactly. That's really funny. It's like, "Oh, I'll inform the galaxy." But she gets to treat him while he points the weapon at everybody else. And he has some gas thing, I think, that would go off and kill them if they did anything stupid. We see yellow blood, so he's definitely not human.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be blood or something else, but yeah, okay, so blood.
I assume.
And
it looked like a nasty wound, but it said it's yellow, so sure, he's alien.
Good point. He's definitely not human, even though he looks human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is where he starts giving us some of his story.
Yes, he starts. So it's basically he's really here to capture a Goa'uld. His name is Kel'Tar. And so Carr has discovered that Kel'Tar is plotting against him, and that's why he wants him dead.
Yeah, and...
Or captured. Well, I think it doesn't matter. Dead or alive, but captured.
Right. And then he tells our team that he's also going to get a great bounty because he managed to capture all of them.
Yeah.
And he does this...
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I know what you're going to do, so I'll let you do it.
I have it verbatim. So Daniel says, "What do you expect to get for us?" And he says, "Well, Tilk is worth the most. The system lords would love to make a good example of him. And Carter here, well, she has the memories of the Tok'ra Jonnar. And you, Neil, you're considered, well, you're a pain in the mikta." Which I think Jack asks Tilk, like, mikta? Like, no, he says, like, was it neck? And Tilka says, and just shakes his head. No. And Daniel asks, because he was left out, he's like, "What about me?" And he says, "Well, you're probably happy to get a day's ration for you."
And Daniel actually looks disappointed that the bounty on him is so low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but good news for the team, because the gold is actually worth 2 times what they're worth together. Mm-hmm. Very high value. Goa'uld. Interesting. For as much as the team has been a pain in the mikta.
Right. And so then he drops a new plan on everyone that he very likely just pulled out of his mikta.
I think he admits as much. He's like, "That wasn't the plan, but I have to adapt."
But this is what we're going to do now.
Yeah.
Yes. So his new plan is, since he just got his mikta kicked by a Goa'uld but escaped, he wants SG-1 to help him capture this Goa'uld. And in exchange, he'll let them go.
Yeah. He says, "Hey, I'll take help whenever I can get it. You see, this injury is going to take time to heal, and I don't have that luxury. So Carr can figure out everything I can figure out, and if I want to trade Kel'Tar back to Sokar, I've got to get him first."
And this that does make sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah.
And Daniel was like, "And how do we know we can trust you?" And he says, "Well, my word is good on over 2,000 planets."
And
Jack says, "Oh, there's millions or something."
Yeah, someone points out there's a lot more than 2,000 planets. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Tilk has the right idea. He's like, "It would appear we have no choice."
Right. So Space Boba Fett, he decides he's going to take Jack and Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
cool.
They're also worth the least, right? So.
Right. But it also gives us a team up that we usually don't get to see.
That's true.
Because our team up is usually Jack and Teal'c.
Mm-hmm.
So I did like that we had this alternate team up.
Yeah. So they leave and go outside and go hiking. And they take a break somewhere. And he gets like a water bottle out and he squirts some blue liquid in his bottle. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hint, hint.
And right, a little bit of foreshadowing there. Mm-hmm. The water bottle is absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
So I recognized the water bottle.
Okay.
Because it was at least back when this show was being shot.
Mm-hmm.
This would have been a very common hiking water bottle.
Yeah.
Except they had glued pieces onto it and then painted it.
Yeah. So now it's a space hiking water
bottle. Now it's a space hiking water bottle, but it was still very clearly
this
$5 water bottle that you buy at REI. Yeah.
That's what you do. So he has a plan. It's not a good plan, but it's a plan. He wants Jack and Daniel to surrender to the Google World.
Yeah. And so he wants them to surrender,
mm-hmm.
I guess Jack's like, and then what?
Mm-hmm. God, that's no big plan. He's like, I think Jack even says something, you're supposed to be the best, greatest bounty hunter in the galaxy. And Aris says, look, do you want to know how I became the greatest bounty hunter in the galaxy? I'm the greatest because I'm alive. That's it. Period. I'm not greedy. If I can catch a Goa'uld equipped with all kinds of fancy toys without risking my neck, that's a damn good compromise.
Okay, so to me this is interesting because we have this very cocky character,
mm-hmm.
who then turns around and says, look, the only reason that I'm the best is because I'm the one that hasn't died.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there is to it.
Yeah. I mean, does make it pretty good because, I mean, he seems to get results and he doesn't die doing it. So, good start. Yeah.
But Jack, you know, Jack still wants to know what they're supposed to do after they get captured because that doesn't seem like a good plan.
Yeah.
And Space Bounty Hunter wants them to shoot the Goa'uld.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any guns. And he's like, oh, well, here. And throws a Zat gun to them.
Yeah, and we get some Zat gun joke. I don't remember what they said. Just wrote down Zat gun.
Yeah, well, Space Boba Fett calls the Zat gun by its full name.
Ah, oh, that's true. Yes.
And Jack's like, yeah, a Zat gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so Space Boba Fett's like, oh, that actually is a lot easier to say.
Yeah, and he
like
says, that. Drop the nicotil.
Yeah, drop the nicotil.
He's like, I guess it does save a bit of effort.
Yeah.
Never thought of it.
And then Jack does exactly what I would expect Jack to do.
He's like, you're giving me a working Zen gun? And he's like, well, if it didn't work, then it wouldn't do you any good. I'm trusting you. And then Jack just casually shoots him or Zats in and walks away. Mm-hmm.
Just leaves him on the ground, walks away.
Yeah, but we see, like, he keeps his eyes closed and then he's kind of squinting. He's like, okay, are they gone? So, like, it didn't work.
Yeah. And but anyhow, so they get back to the ship.
Mm-hmm.
They forgot
the secret password. Daniel can't remember it.
But finally he does. So they get in. And
Jack says, like, almond, like something bark. And he's like, almond bark, Barco Lounger, Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
Daniel says, Barkna, it was Barkna. And I'm like, well, if it was Barkna, the door would be opening, wouldn't it? And then he does.
And of course.
They kind of replay the scene and they're like, oh, it's Barakna.
Barakna. And
Jack says, Gesundheit.
Yeah. And and now that they're inside.
Mm-hmm.
They want to fire up the ship. They want to fly away, but they also need to get Sam and Teal'c, mm-hmm. out of the storage hold, which is passcode protected.
Yeah, and Daniel enters some passcode that he thinks is correct, and that activates the ship. But well, there's something like a bomb happening, some self-destruct of some sort.
Yeah, says Teal'c quickly. I think we have a countdown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, there should be three crystals to disable it. One is missing.
There's only two. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one is missing.
Yeah, and then ours walks back in. Like,
He lets everyone know.
Yeah, but it's the funny thing is, like, he's totally relaxed. He doesn't even disable the countdown. He's like,
and
nothing happens. Like, the countdown goes to zero, and it's like, nothing happens.
And then he takes the third crystal and drops it in.
Mm-hmm.
And and then he explains to everyone that that he's not affected by the Zat gun blast.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, why would I hand you a gun that works on me? Like, he just wanted to see them sweat a little.
Yeah, so Jack zaps him again.
In his ass.
And he goes, oh, that tickles.
So now they're all going together to hunt down the gold. And SG-1 kind of negotiates to get some of their stuff back. Not their weapons, but at least some of the gear.
Yeah, and okay, so where the path we've taken in the episode so far, I'm enjoying that the episode is a little more lighthearted, even though the stakes are high.
Yeah.
I am definitely enjoying that here's this person that it's just not dead serious about everything, and I'm the bounty hunter, and I'm going to get you. It's like yeah, screw you.
He also doesn't seem to be all that good about bounty hunting. I mean, he admits it. He said, I'm good because I'm alive. and they still have a problem with the plan, though. So like, Daniel seems to be like, oh, you don't seem to have much of a problem trading human life like commodities. And he points out, and I think it's a good point, he says, oh, you earthlings in your morality, does it ever occur to you that someone outside your solar system might not see the things the way you do?
I totally forgot about this part.
Yeah.
Which is no surprise because, you know, on brand. Exactly. But as you're bringing it up, yes, I remember now. And yeah, it's a good reminder that we do not live in an Earth-centric universe.
Yeah. And I think but I'm surprised that you forgot this conversation, because it's a really important conversation, because we get a little bit behind why is Aris doing the thing that he's doing.
Now, that part I remember.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Carter points out, it's like, why don't the Goa'uld just kill you and take from you what they want? And he says, yeah, they don't, because I deliver. And as long as I'm alive, there will always be a next time. So why don't they make him a host? Right? That's a good question. And Aris, like, revealed something that's quite important. He says, because they can't. They tried that a long time ago when they first came to my home planet. But there's something about my race, or about my race's physical makeup, that rejected gold blending. I don't know why. So they basically wiped out almost his entire race. They kept the youngest as slaves and killed the rest, basically.
Now, I remember all of this part. It's funny that the morality part, I had forgotten about that. But what really stood out to me in this was the potential for a storyline where they hunt for an inoculation, if you will, to being taken over by a Goa'uld.
Yeah.
Because we know there's a race out there that can't take on the symbiote.
Yeah, exactly. So he says, like, I managed to impress them. My people have always been strong and skilled. That's why the Goa'uld kept the youngest and killed the rest. And Daniel says, well, you could have your freedom. I mean, there must be a lot of planets where Goa'uld wouldn't find you. And he points out, he's like, what freedom? They killed my wife, but my son lives. He's a slave on Sokar's. In one of Sokar's Naquadah mines, and one day I hope to capture a prize valuable enough to trade for his freedom as well as mine.
So, yeah, well, I mean,
they tried.
Now we have his motivation.
Yeah, but there's also they tried. They tried to argue with him. I think they got a little bit deeper and understood more why he's doing it. Or at least supposedly so, because later we learned that he lied. But
yeah.
So they reach, basically they reach the riverbed in the cave where the gold is. They've tracked him there. Or at least that's where the last place where Aris had seen Keltar. Jack mentions, like, oh, he had some fancy toys. And he says, yeah, small hand device. And when I approached the cave, there were energy blasts firing from several directions. So Jack is like, I need another Zed, at least. So the plan is they will shoot the Gorgold and Aris will step back and set a shield trap. And Carter will step back, of course, because
reasons. Have to have a hostage.
Have to have a hostage, and she's worth a lot, apparently.
Yeah, so off they go.
Mm-hmm. And he says, Jack says, oh, I thought you wanted to watch us work. And it's like, I trust you. You do? Nah, not really, but...
No, he doesn't.
Yeah. So they...
Yeah, and so I believe I've got the order right. Instead of following them, we stay behind with us. I've got the order wrong even when I thought had it right.
We first follow them. This is the point where we now start to have A and B plot for a brief while.
Yeah, very briefly. Yep.
Yeah, so we go with O'Neill and Tilk. And... Jack wants to figure out, like, when he asks Tilkwiki, of course, like, how does he fire weapons from multiple directions? To which Tilk says, tacks. And Jack says, technicals?
And the word that Christopher Judge rattles off like it's nothing. How long did he have to rehearse saying that?
I wrote it down and I'm like, tech unitarans? Something like
that. Yeah, I mean it's an absolutely ridiculous
word. It's a ridiculous word.
But it's great for the joke.
It's great for the joke because Jack just looks at him and says, tacks.
So Jack throws a rock out into the opening and nothing happens.
And he's like, he's seeking, and it's like, so it would seem. So Tilk, no.
Yeah, so he throws a lit flare out, and of course it starts shooting at the flare.
Which gives away the positions where it's shooting from, so they use the Zed guns to destroy the things. We've seen the little orb thingies,
Look like Jedi remotes.
No, they're kind of the grenades we've seen before. I think they're probably the same prop.
Oh my god! I didn't even think about that.
Yeah,
that is funny. I think you're right. It's the round grenade things. Mm-hmm. But all I could think of was that little training remote thing from the Millennium Falcon when Luke Skywalker's learning how to use his lightsaber.
Yeah, maybe it could also be yes.
Yeah. But I think you're right. It's the grenade prop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think Tilk throws like a smoke grenade into the cave. And out comes the Gorgold injured.
Right. And he's got his now I remember the term. He's got his ribbon.
The ribbon device, yes.
On.
Mm-hmm. And he tries to use it, but it kind of goes over their heads. Like, it doesn't really...
Yeah, so they zat him once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he says, hi, my name is Cora.
Mm-hmm. And Daniel says, we're told...
How can I remember that? I can't get the order of scenes right, but I can remember this one...
Maybe
off
because
character's name is Cora.
Maybe you watch The Legends of Cora?
No, we can add that to the list of shows.
Wow, you're—I mean, I would have assumed that one you would have seen since you like animated shows and anime and whatever.
I do, and yet I haven't seen that
spin-off from Avatar: Last Airbender,
which I haven't seen.
Spin-off
either.
Or prequel? I don't remember which way. Anyway, wow, you haven't seen that one. Huh, interesting.
See, another our one list, for the list keeps getting longer.
Yes. Apparently they were told his name was Keltar, but his name is really Korra, and turns out he is Tok'ra.
And okay, so this little bit right here, I liked because he's throwing a twist in on us, but we don't know if he's telling the truth.
Yes, that's true. That's exactly true. We don't know. I mean, it might be a ghoul just trying to save his own Mikta and
right.
Yes.
And yeah.
Yeah. Now we go back to Carter and Aris.
Right. And so this is a scene that I thought came first and I had it backwards. And anyhow, here we are. So it turns out he doesn't really have to trust the Stargate team because he's tracking the Nakuta in their Zat guns.
Correct. Which, by the way, that tracker is actually also a new prop. Like, special new prop they created for this. It's never reused at any point later.
Oh, well. Huh. Hope it wasn't an expensive prop.
Well, I guess not. I mean, it's very small. Carter makes the case that his immunity might be valuable and they could help him get his son back, but he thinks that's impossible.
Yeah. Now, he doesn't elaborate on why it's impossible.
No, he just says that's impossible. And then we go back to the rest of the team.
Right, and now they're trying to figure out if Korra is lying or not.
Yeah. And he says Carter would have been able to.
So
yeah,
they're like, oh yeah, now it really makes sense why he didn't let us bring Carter along.
Yeah, because she would have been able. And he reveals that the ship that they were in isn't actually ours; it's Korra's.
And then he says, oh, and by the way, he's going to turn all of us over to Sokar.
And the ship. Yeah. And the ship, that kind of makes sense for me because I'm like, why would a bounty hunter need a cloak chip? I mean, it might be handy, but it's not really required. But for Tok'ra, that totally makes sense. They're all about stealth and hiding and sneaking around. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We go back to Carter and Aris.
Yeah, and now we learn a little bit more about Space Boba Fett's feelings about Gold in general.
Yeah, Gold and Tok'ra, because he thinks that they're the same. He's like, there's no difference. And of course, Carter disagrees.
Of course. And she tells him, look, you know, you need to learn more about who the Tok'ra are.
Yeah, she's like, no, it's not true. If you really hate the Goa'uld, you'd try to learn more about the Tok'ra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I have like a verbatim little interaction here that I found really, really good. He says, oh, the whole thing is amusing when you know just how insurmountable the task is. Defeating the Goa'uld, yeah. Oh, admirable, but amusing. Admirable, but amusing. So, and he says, Carter says, if enough of the right allies work together, the task might not be so insurmountable. And Carter says, yeah, you mean me? Well, I couldn't help you as much as you think. And Carter says, you mean you won't? You know what I think. I think you care, and I don't think you like what you do as nearly as much as you pretend to. And that's also, I think this is really important because that explains kind of what happens later. You can clearly tell he's not doing this. I mean, he might be somewhat good at it. He might have flexible morals, I would call it.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not really, he doesn't really want to do it. Yeah, it's more a necessity.
Yeah.
A survival
yes. thing. Doesn't, necessity, that's what I was looking yeah. for.
I mean, yeah. doesn't excuse the things he's done, but...
Yeah, and now we get the ham-fisting part of the episode. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They've been gentle up until now.
Okay.
Now that I remember this clearly because I out loud mm-hmm. to my office manager sitting on the couch next to me, I said, mm-hmm. "Oh, come on."
Mm-hmm.
So the camera zooms in on Space Boba Fett's hand.
Yeah, and the handshakes.
It's trembling a
mm-hmm.
lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so he pulls out more of the blue stuff, pours it in the water bottle, and drinks it.
Yeah. He makes another drink with flavor. I think she even asks him. He said, oh, it's just yeah. flavor.
Yeah. See, that was part of the whole ham fisting. Mm-hmm. You know, what's that you put in the water? And he goes, it's flavor.
And it's of course it's not.
Yeah. And that resulted in my, oh, come yeah. on.
Yeah. Yeah, and now we get to the point that I mentioned earlier, like where we learn that Aris also is lying.
Yeah.
Because Korra reveals that Aris doesn't even have a family.
Right. Yeah. And but he's not lying about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because it turns out his race can't be used as hosts.
Yeah.
They were killed. Yeah. Oh, great.
Yeah, so he says it's true that this race cannot be used as hosts, and most were slaughtered by the Gould. Those that were kept alive were addicted to a substance called Roshna. It's given to them in their water. And now, after many generations, Aris Bok's race cannot live without Roshna. They depend on it. It keeps them subservient. If he stops taking Roshna, he will die. That sounds a lot like something Gould would do, right?
It does.
It's very much like Jafar.
Yep. And this is where
mm-hmm.
I told my office manager, it's Ketracel White.
It is like that.
All the DS9 fans out there are like, oh my God, yes.
Mm-hmm. It is like that. Which was earlier, I think, timeline-wise. Yeah, definitely earlier timeline-wise.
Yeah.
Like early 90s, okay. I think. Yeah. But there's a point here which I also liked. Korra does not defend him. He says, I do not defend him. Aris Bok has endeared himself to Gould by being unscrupulous. He indiscriminately hunts both guilty and innocent, only caring about whether they have any trading value. Which is the point I made earlier. Like, he definitely did things. Like, he might not enjoy what he's doing, but he does them.
Mm-hmm.
So he cannot excuse them. And I think also important point, they can't hand Korra over to Sokar. The Tok'ra have other operatives in his midst that he probably would reveal, because we know the Gould are good at that. I think he mentions even that Sokar has technologies or has means of getting to that information. So he would not allow that to happen. And then he tells them as a final thing, like about the tracking that, like how he's tracking. It's like, it's like all the Gould crap. Also might be helpful to know how to do that, because then the team could do that in the future.
That would be really
find
useful.
Find Gould easier.
Yep. So they ditch the Zat guns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty clear at this point that the boy team
mm-hmm.
trusts Korra.
Yeah. They seem with everything that he's told them, I think they seem to trust him. Carter and Aris discovers that the team wasn't successful, or at least that they left the weapons behind because they haven't moved in a while. Kind of makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so either they're dead
mm-hmm.
or they've dumped the weapons.
Yeah.
That's what you were saying. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
My brain just caught up with the words that came out of your mouth.
No worries. So he shoots Carter with some sort of beam from his Boba Fett weapon.
Yeah.
Blaster.
from Star-Lord's gun.
Star-Lord's blaster.
Mm-hmm.
And then leaves her behind as bait. And we get another Star Wars reference because Jake says, it's a trap.
I did catch that, and I thought that was really funny. Yeah.
So Jack decides, okay, even if it's a trap, like, he can't leave Carter there. Right.
Right.
So he's going to go to her, and Teal'c will, as he says, take him when he shows up. How exactly he's going to do that, I don't know.
Doesn't matter. It's Teal'c. He can do whatever he wants.
Yes. Unfortunately, that's not how it goes down.
Yeah. So the way this played out, and the way it ties into the next scene, there's a bit in it that just felt kind of lame to me.
Okay.
So Jack sneaks up to where Sam is and checks to make sure she has a pulse.
Yeah.
And then gets her to wake up and she sits up. They're having a little bit of a back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then the turtle ship comes up over the edge of the cliff where they are. And they're all caught.
Well,
I mean, we don't see them get caught.
No, kind of not. Like, that, I mean, it's pretty clear that Carter and Jack, I mean, they couldn't flee. Like, with the weapons from the ship and whatever, they could just, I mean, he could just mow down the forest, right? So they're caught.
Space Boba Fett gives them the finger.
Yeah.
Which was kind of funny.
But since Daniel, Teal'c, and Korra were out of sight, right? While waiting for him, they flee. They run away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's right. It doesn't last very long because, like, the next scene, basically, we're in the ship. Carter passed out again. Wakes up with... So Jack and Carter are in the cargo hold, I guess, again. And he talks about Korra, right?
Right, and this is where I had part of the problem. Why did she have to be passed out again?
I mean, who knows? Maybe they he shot them again, like with a blaster.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know, but it didn't play well for me.
Mm.
It just seemed kind of lame that she had to be.
I didn't care. I was like, whatever.
Well, I get bent out of shape about the lamest things in these episodes.
Yeah, apparently. It's like, for me, it was like, yeah, whatever. Like, maybe the beam was more draining than you thought, and she kind of passed
out.
You never know.
I mean, I did get over it, but it bothered me in the moment.
Yeah.
Clearly, I didn't get over it because I'm talking about it now.
Yeah.
I didn't get over it.
So let's move on. So she does, like, Jack talks about Korra, and she recognizes the name. She's like, yeah, I think I know him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's about to meet him because, well, the other three aren't far behind. They get captured pretty quickly.
Yeah. And...
not a surprise. I mean, he's a bounty hunter. The Korra is kind of injured. Daniel is not exactly stealthy. And, I mean, he can't do much with the other two, so...
Teal'c on his own would be a different story, but yep.
Yeah. So. But he is keeping the end of his bargain. Like, he's like, you can go.
But he does let us know that we're on a time schedule now because Sokar is on his way.
Yeah, he informs Sokar and he's sending one of his motherships. So. He's coming. And as they're talking, he zaps Korra because he saw that he was about to kill himself. Tok'ra makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes things because, and I have that verbatim again because it's a good direction. Aris Buck is kind of surprised. He's like, poison? That's very un-Gold. Like, why would he do that? And Carter says, to save the lives of other Tok'ra. And Aris says, since when do Goa'uld care about... since when does a Goa'uld care about another Goa'uld? And Carter says, I told you, the Tok'ra are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to at least introduce second thoughts into the whole thing. It's like, maybe there is more to this story and maybe I should care more about them. But there's a problem because Sokar is coming.
Right. And and so Teal'c says, let everyone go and keep me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm absolutely worth a lot. So I think Sokar will still be happy with you.
Right.
And Aris agrees.
It's like, the rest of the team isn't happy about this, but they can see they have no choice.
Yeah. And Aris throws Carter the missing part of the DHD so that they can leave.
And Sam has a line to let us know that she just caught the missing piece of the DHD so they can now leave, which I thought was funny, but I get why they had to do it because... okay, I'm just going to point out that I'm still on brand because I'm overanalyzing a stupid line that doesn't need to be analyzed or explained. So I'll stop and let's move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. She says the missing piece of her DHD.
Yeah.
and then Dirk says we're choiceless. And Jack says we'll find you, which, yeah, is a good point. They will definitely try to find him.
Yeah. So, okay.
And ours has a funny thing. He says, oh, this is so beautiful. I mean, I'm starting to cheer up here, you know, but we got to go now.
Yeah. Okay. So now we get a scene that I actually, I didn't like do a full on laugh out loud, but I was chuckling under my breath. So we're outside the turtle ship with everyone except Teal'c and Space Boba Fett because they're in the ship.
Yeah.
And so we see the door on the ship close. So it's the inner door. Then we see the outer door close, but it closes and then it slides forward so that it's flush with part of the ship.
Yeah.
And then another part of the ship slides forward and then another piece and then wings are popping out. And it's like, holy crap, could you have made this door more complicated? And I mean, the answer is probably yes, but just the whole door closing thing, I found to be incredibly ridiculous. And I know it's absolutely petty and has no bearing on the rest of the episode. And yet here we are. Okay. That's out of my system. I can move on now.
Yeah. Teal'c sits down next to the pilot's chair. There's a shield surrounding him. So like that he can't do anything to Aris, like stop him.
Right.
Yeah. By the way, I wanted to mention the seat that is a running gag in SG-1 from now on. The cargo ship seats.
Okay, yeah, seen something.
How bad they are.
That's going to come up.
Yes.
Again. Okay.
How bad they are. They're kind of ridiculous. Yeah. They're taking off and the team on the ground is kind of leaving. Korra regains consciousness and he's confused. And Daniel explains that Teal'c went to his place. And then we get a nice scene at the cargo ship because Aris says, it's a pretty noble thing you're doing. And Teal'c points out he's made a sacrifice as well. And he says, I guess the Space Prophet says, I guess I never knew the Tok'ra were different, you know? So what made you betray Apophis? And Teal'c says, the Gua'uld are enslavers of worlds. The humans value freedom. And Aris says, you don't really think the Tok'ra and the humans have a chance of overthrowing the Gua'uld, do you?
And then
good question. And Teal'c says, I do. And Aris says, I don't think so. And Teal'c says, I would rather serve with those willing to die trying. And Aris says, I really don't want to do this. I hate the Gua'uld as much as you do. First, I think for the first time, probably, honest. Like before, it was kind of a spur of a moment. He'll leave. He's unsure. He'll take Teal'c and let the others go. But I think this is a point where he's like, okay, there's some truth to what Teal'c said. I mean, he is a Jaffa.
Yeah.
He's a like a fighter, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the tipping point really was Teal'c saying that he'd rather serve with people who are trying to be free.
Yeah, even if they fail, he doesn't care. Yeah. He's like, I would rather die trying with people that will do it with me than the opposite or the alternative.
So now we're back outside the ship again.
Yeah, so they're climbing up a ridge again. And then we see the ship explode all of a sudden in the background. So it's climbing, and then it explodes.
I liked how they did this. Mm-hmm. I felt like this was one of the for everything we've seen for ships, mm-hmm. spaceships and stuff in the series, I felt like this was one of the most realistic parts, even though you could tell that we're looking at some CG. Just mm-hmm. first, We have the smoke trail or the vapor trail or whatever from the turtle ship.
Yeah.
And for the amount of time that's transpired from when the door closed mm-hmm. to finish that conversation inside the ship to back outside.
Yeah.
We can see where the ship is in the sky. Mm-hmm. And that seems like a very realistic distance for the ship to have gone.
Yeah.
I'm aware I'm totally overanalyzing this, but I'm rolling with it.
Yeah. I have a different point.
But I really liked it.
I have a different point about this because I have some production background on this one. So the destruction sequence was staged with two separate miniature explosions for like the extra visual, like 1-2 punch. Like it's two explosions back to back, basically.
Oh, okay.
And it's a miniature. I mean, we know that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, so I guess it's not computer generated then, but.
Probably enhanced CGI, but it's actually a practical explosion. Yeah. And for like a brief hot second, we think, oh no, they're dead.
Right. And then we see these two things
dart. Shoot down, basically. They're escape pods.
And I like that they had the kind of vapor trail coming off of them as well. Mm-hmm. Just anyhow, the effects in this scene, the way they did them, mm-hmm. I was very pleased with that.
Yeah, and then we get also like a funny scene. So like the team reaches one of the escape pods, and it's ours. And they ask like, "Oh, where's Teal'c?" And Teal'c steps out like, "Oh, I'm here." Yeah. Ares says that he told Sokar he had technical difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I had some technical difficulties which I communicate to Sokar's ship just after I accidentally removed this. And he shows the crystal again from the self-destruct.
Mm-hmm. Like, which he gives to Jack.
Yeah, which here, he gives
to Jack. Have a memento.
Yeah. And Daniel asks the important question. He's like, won't Sokar be angry? And Ari says, oh, hopefully he thinks I'm dead. By the time he figures it out, I'll be long gone. Good point. But what about the Roshna, right? He still needs it. And he's like,
he needs his Ketracel White.
Yeah, and he's like, I can probably trade with another Gowold. Like, there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Summit will trade with him. And he says, Dr. Jackson, I was lying to you before. The price on your head is much more than a day's rations. Actually, the Gowold want to see you dead as much as anyone for figuring out the Stargate. So he lied.
So he lied, mm-hmm. But this is likely a truth here, because mm-hmm. if he's making up a lie, he probably wouldn't have known about Daniel's involvement.
In what for? I think he was just playing with some earlier to kind of.
Oh, yeah. He's just totally screwing with him.
Yeah. But now I think he's right. And he throws Carter a vial of the Roshna. He says, who knows, maybe someday someone will figure out a way for what's left of my people to be free of the Gowold. And that would be something worth trading for.
So, and then roll credits.
Almost. We get a little thing. So the team is walking off, and Ares is still standing there. And we see Teal'c walk down, and he stops next to Ares. And he kind of nods at him, kind of a form of respect, and then walks away.
Oh,
which is a really nice thing. I mean, getting respect from Teal'c, I think it's more important than anything else to him, because he knows that that is not something Teal'c does give.
Yeah. Easily. So
that is the end.
All right. Now roll credits.
Yes.
So what did you think about the episode?
I kind of liked it. I mean, is it the best episode ever? No. But I kind of liked it. I mean, we're spending a whole day outside, basically. Mm-hmm. We get a nice, interesting... I mean, the story is not super unique. I mean, we reference Boba Fett the entire time. Like, yeah, this has been done before. Like, bounty hunter stories are a dime a dozen. Like, we've seen that.
Yeah.
This is kind of the Stargate twist on it, with, like, Tok'ra and spaceships and explosions and all of that. Shields, like, a little bit extra. But, like, it's a good story. It's an interesting story. I liked the bounty hunter stuff is less interesting. It is still fun and interesting and Sam Jones is really good as Space Boba Fett.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the background bits are actually more interesting. The stuff Cora says about Sokar and what's going on and about the race, what we learn from Aris, which turned out to be true, like about his race and the Roshna, and that at the end of the day, Carter has a sample of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they also know that it's possible for a race to be, to call it immune to Gold.
Mm-hmm.
Which is worth a lot, if they can figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. They might be able to free... They might even be able to free people through that. Free the Jaffa, free other human races. As I said, make the world suffer.
Mm-hmm.
By denying them hosts, stuff like that. So it's... I think it's an interesting and intriguing plot point that we set up here. I said, and it's a fun story. Like, he's a fun character, the quips, like all of that. That I wouldn't call him very good. He's not a good bounty hunter. I mean, he's only good in the sense he has survived this now. He has been effective in a way by being very resourceful, I would call it. Very flexible in all directions, morally.
Opportunistic,
all of it. I don't think he's a very good bounty hunter. He's not that what you would think of a like very good bounty hunter, like no nonsense, can fight all of that. I don't think that's him.
Yeah, I agree. We never see him fight in any way.
No,
we see him use tools to control situations.
Yeah, he sets up situations so that he is always in control. Like he has his suit that makes him immune to certain weapons. He sets up traps to capture people. He figures out how to track people from the distance, how to use resources he has available around him to kind of get to what he needs to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Stealing the ship. I mean, he figured out the ship on his own mostly, apparently, because that was on that planet. So,
yeah,
it's as I said, he is definitely resourceful. And I think that's, as I said, it's an interesting story.
Okay. So, here's my take.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun ride.
It is.
And the elements that you've already called out as interesting, I am on board. If you hadn't called those out, I would have myself. I like the possibility that we have been given a setup for a future story element figuring out a cure for the Ketracel White addiction, and the possibility of coming up with some form of I like how you said it, immunity to being a Gould host.
Yeah, I'm not saying this is what happens. I'm just saying that the potential is there.
Right, and
I don't want to spoil it.
I totally got that's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I'm with you. I like that we have this potential for this to be a thing in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect that, well, even before you told me that the turtle ship set, that it was built for this episode to get used again, I assumed, since we saw as much of the turtle ship as we did, that this was a thing that was going to show up again. So I'm expecting there will be other turtle ship adventures in the future, and that the cloaking thing for that ship will be part of it. Even though this one blew up, it doesn't mean that there can't be others.
Oh, there's
that are out there.
Others. I mean, the Tok'ra probably has an entire fleet of those things, because that's them.
Yeah, so we're going to get to see the cloak ship again, and that'll be fun. And it didn't feel like a super deep or generally important episode. But it was just a fun little ride.
It was. And the fact that we didn't use at all standing sets was also pretty good.
Yeah. So, how many chevrons would you give this one, Patrice?
So that's a difficult one now. I think I'm going to give it a 7. It's just a fun ride. Like, for no reason other than I just really enjoyed that episode. Like, the quips, like everything I just said, it's just enjoyable. Like, without even thinking about long-term anything, it's just enjoyable.
Okay. For me, it's a 6.
It's a 6. Okay. I was bordering on a 6, I have to tell you. But I like, after talking about it, I'm like, so why is it a 6 for you?
It was a fun ride that I really enjoyed, but it didn't come across as anything special. So yeah, it was a solid 6.
Okay. Solid 6. I'll take it.
Yeah. So, I bet you are going to tease me a little bit about the next episode, aren't you?
I'll tell you 2 things.
Okay.
The title is Demons.
Okay.
And the German title is, and this time not spoilers, it's Dämonen, also demons.
Huh. Interesting.
This time Germans were like, oh no, this is fine. So, I don't know.
Okay.
We probably do not have to change this. It is fine.
So, all right. Here's my prediction on this one. Oh, by the way, my predictions on Dead Man Switch were wrong.
Completely wrong.
Completely wrong. So here's my prediction on this one. Demons doesn't refer to literal demons. This refers to having to deal with the consequences of actions in some way, you know, how you, or dealing with your, like, dealing with your inner demons, that sort of thing. I don't know exactly how that plays out, but it's, you know, this is Stargate SG-1. It's either that or it's going to be like non-corporeal aliens and steal the Stargate team's bodies, or, you know, something like that.
I'm not going to tell you.
I can't wait to see how wrong I am on this one.
Yes.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. I can tell you that. It's a good episode. It's an interesting episode. Well, let's put it this way.
I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, the first few episodes, couple episodes of this season, it was kind of rough.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like they were really in their groove. But I feel like the past few episodes, they've gotten back into that. And I feel like we're getting solid episodes again.
Yeah. I mean, this next episode is episode 8. So we're closing in on the mid-season. Area. Like 11 would be half time. So, yeah. We're getting closer.
Well, I'm enjoying this still. And I like the adventure that we're getting to go on as we hop through the Stargate again and again. And I do like that we have variety. And this is something that I brought up. I might have been during one of our season one discussions, but I like that we've had variety. It's not every week we have Planet of the Week and Gold Fight of the Week.
Yeah, but I mean,
step
we do
through
get
the Stargate news story.
Yeah, but we do get a ton of that. Like, it's not. I mean, we do get Gold of the Week, but it's not every episode, which is a good
right.
Mix.
Yeah, and it hasn't been, and they step through the gate, and now the new adventure starts every mm-hmm. week. Some we've had on base episodes, we've had a nice mix of things already.
We've had an entire episode on Earth, like not on base, but on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so yeah, we're getting a good mix. I said Demons is next, and we'll see. Is it on Earth? Is it not? We'll have to see.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it, and I guess we're getting close to time to close the iris, but before we do that, we should talk about where people can find us. So, Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, me, every week with you, almost every week, on the British Tech Network, Mac Show on Friday, Big Show on Thursday. I don't know why I turned it around, but it's probably because...
Just mixing it up.
Yes, maybe Iris Bock influenced me a little bit and I'm mixing things up. Everything I'm doing, all the social media links, the podcast, the projects on thepatrice.com. I did a little revision of the site, so check it out. It's not that different. It's just small little things here and there. It has a proper dark nice. Mode now, so that's
nice. Oh, nice. You know, thank you for staying on top of stuff like that. You rock. Yeah.
You're welcome. Yeah. How about you?
Jay Gamut on the various socials. Active right now on Mastodon and Blue Sky and PixelFed. And then you've already mentioned a bunch of shows that we're mm-hmm. on together. A couple that I'm on independently of those. Chuck Darnius Mac Voices Live, and then of course The Context Machine with Brian Chaffin.
Mm-hmm.
There's more, but that's enough for now, because I want to make sure that we know where everyone can get a hold of us for the show. Mm-hmm. So on Mastodon, we're Retro Rewatch at techhangout.social.
Correct.
And then on Blue Sky, we're at retrorewatch.com. And you can also email us at hello@retrorewatch.com.
Yeah. And I think at this point, I'm going to close the predictions.
Okay.
We've been asking for them for a little while, but with like this 8th episode, I mean, this is basically a third of the season. I think it's time. So thanks for anybody who did submit. And we'll talk about that at some future point, I hope.
I bet we'll find a way to make that happen. Yep. So thank you, everyone, for that. And, thanks for joining us for another episode. It is time to close the iris so that I can move back over to the couch and watch Demons.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can record another episode soon.
Oh, yes. Looking forward to that. It's going to be interesting.
All right. Well, thanks again, everyone, and we'll see you next time.